free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Thursday, March the 12th, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. Yesterday, we saw the stock market go down again, and we had President Trump to an Oval Office address enacting a suspension of travel from Europe for 30 days, beginning midnight tomorrow night. So why did you wait 2 days if it's an emergency? Well, quite frankly, I think it's an overreaction in the first place. President Trump is being goaded into doing something that I think is not in our best interest. To shut this country down. and he says these prohibitions will not only apply to the tremendous amount of trade and cargo, but various other things as we get approval. I mean, quite frankly, why wait? If it's an emergency, do it now, right now. We just shut everything down, lock everybody in your houses, don't go out until we get a vaccine. And then you're not going to come out until you take the vaccine. You won't travel, you won't go to school, you won't go to work. This has been coming for a long time, and quite frankly, folks, I am afraid now. Not of the virus, not of the flu. At the same time, the CDC, these same people who have been blowing the whistle on everything, look at how many different pandemics we've had. The WHO, the WHO, has now told us yet again that we have a pandemic. They did it with the swine flu. They did it with Zika. They did it with Ebola, they did it with MERS and SARS, and none of those turned out to be the kind of life-threatening situation that we see. Yeah, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. You have to understand what risks are, however. Just like when we're talking about firearms, you have to understand and manage risks. This could be a good way to manage the risks if you want to do that, but I think this is feeding the fear and the paranoia and the panic. And make no mistake about it, folks, you are being manipulated psychologically in this situation. And that's what you should fear. You should fear the kind of controls that are being put on us, especially in our own minds. And we're going to talk about this in detail as we come back. Now, again, why wait for 2 days? And why are we at the same time sending 30,000 U.S. soldiers into Europe, into Italy, without any masks? Why are we doing that? Oh, don't come here. We'll send our people over there. I mean, everything about this is insane. I tweeted out this morning. So does banning travel from Europe, does that make President Trump a racist? Well, yes, even though it's white people, right? He was racist. It was a Muslim ban when he put in a ban for immigration with countries that we were at war with, including Venezuela and North Korea, and five Muslim countries, even though you have 50 predominantly Muslim countries, when five of them you had travel bans because we were at war with them. They said, this is a Muslim ban, right? Except it also included Venezuela and North Korea. And now, so is this a European ban? Is it okay? Is it okay now that we're banning white people, white Europeans from coming in? Well, no, he still gets criticized for that. CNN's Jim Acosta said, this is xenophobia. You're calling this a foreign virus. Well, it did happen in China. And we should remember, as these statists, many of them holdovers from the Bush regime that enacted the Patriot Act after 9/11, they're now telling us this is the equivalent of war. We need to handle this like the Chinese government has handled it. We need to have centralized command and control. That's what Richard Hatchett is saying. And he's getting press everywhere. Everybody loves what he has to say. I'm seeing conservatives saying this as well. You don't understand the prison that you are forging for yourself and your families. We're going to talk about this when we come back. Stay with us.
Deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
That's right, folks. This is an emergency test, and you're being tested. Are you going to react to this? Are you going to lock yourself down in fear? Are we going to lock the country down in fear like the Chinese communists have done? We've said over and over again, China is the beta test site for everything that the globalists want to do. And now we have the globalists saying we have to lock down like they did in China. We have to establish centralized command and control, and we have to empty the streets, just like China did. This is a test, folks. When we look at JetBlue CEO Robin Hayes, says the coronavirus impact on airline demand is probably worse than after 9/11. And I'm telling you that the threat to our civil liberties, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, what liberties we have left, this is a greater threat to them than 9/11. And let me lay this out for you. Excellent article by John Whitehead. I've had this for a couple of days. I've been meaning to get to this. It is now time to talk about this. This is a test. How will the Constitution fare during a nationwide lockdown? He quotes Emily Badger, The Psychology of a Citywide Lockdown. And she says, it takes a remarkable force to keep nearly a million people quietly indoors for an entire day. Home from work and school, from neighborhood errands, from out-of-town travel. It takes a remarkable force to keep businesses closed, cars off the road, to keep playgrounds empty, porches unused, across a densely populated place, 125 square miles in size. This happened not because armed officers went door-to-door, or imposed a curfew, or threatened martial law. All around the region for 13 hours, people locked up their businesses and sheltered in place out of a kind of collective will. The force that kept them there wasn't external. There was virtually no active enforcement across the city of the governor's plea that the people stay indoors. Rather, the pressure was internal, expressed as concern or helpfulness, or in some cases, fear. Fear felt and thousands of individual homes. This is a test. This is not a test of our commitment to basic hygiene or disaster preparedness, writes John Whitehead. No, what is about to unfold over the next few weeks is a test to see how well we have assimilated the government's lessons in compliance, fear, and police state tactics. And this is what concerns me the most. I see not dead bodies piling up in the streets. I see the dead idea of liberty. It no longer lives in the hearts of Americans. You are so afraid. As I look at the people out there, I see conservatives begging for government action that just a couple of weeks ago they were criticizing Bernie Sanders for. Now they're begging for it because they're afraid. Give me liberty or give me death. I'm not going to give up my freedom. I would rather die than live like a slave. I'd rather die than live under socialism, under communism, under centralized control and command. I would rather die. I don't think it's up to that. I don't think that's a choice right now. But if I had that choice, that's the choice I would make. Not Americans. I don't see that anymore in America. What has happened to us that we lost that vision? Whitehead says, most critically of all, this is a test to see whether the Constitution can survive a national crisis and a true state of emergency. See, I think they're going to keep us locked down in fear. They're going to keep you begging for government to give you an income because they won't let you work, or you're afraid to go to work. They're going to have you begging for health care. They're going to have you begging for a vaccine, and they're going to demand that you take that vaccine before you're allowed out, before you're allowed to travel, before you're allowed to work, before you're allowed to go to school. You got your papers? You got your identity papers? Slave? The coronavirus epidemic, which has brought China's Orwellian surveillance out of the shadows, goes on with John Whitehead, caused Italy to declare a nationwide lockdown, threatens to bring the American police state out into the open on a scale that we have never seen before. If and when a nationwide lockdown finally hits, and folks, it's coming on here. I mean, we see emergency declarations. First, they gave emergency powers in the dead of night in Albany, New York, to the state governor. He didn't wait any time to use it. Emergency declarations have been given to the Connecticut governor. Of course, he's not going to wait any time to use that either. That's where liberty goes to die, Connecticut. If and when a nationwide lockdown finally hits, if and when we are forced to shelter in place, if and when militarized police are patrolling the streets, if and when security checkpoints have been established, if and when the media's ability to broadcast the news has been curtailed by government censors, if and when the public systems of communication, phone lines, internet, text messaging, etc., have been restricted, if and when those FEMA camps the government has been surreptitiously building finally get used as quarantine detention centers for American citizens, if and when the military snatch-and-grab teams are deployed on local, state, and federal levels as part of the activated continuity of government plans to isolate anyone suspected of being infected with COVID-19, and if and when martial law is enacted with little real outcry or resistance from the public, then we will truly understand the extent to which the government has fully succeeded in recalibrating our general distaste for anything that smacks of tyranny. This is how it begins. Based on the government's track record and its long-anticipated plans for instituting martial law, using armed forces to solve domestic, political, and social problems, in response to future crises, there's good reason to worry. We had the Pentagon training video that was obtained through a Freedom of Information request by The Intercept. It was prepared by the Army for U.S. Special Operations Command. The training video, and you've probably seen it, we've played it. Megacities, urban future, the emerging complexity. What the government expects the world to look like in 2030. Criminal networks, they said. Substandard infrastructure. Religious and ethnic tensions, impoverishment slums, open landfills, overburdened sewers, a growing mass of unemployed, prosperous economic elite like Bloomberg must be protected from the impoverished have-nots. Yeah, stop and frisk. Throw them up against the wall. Even more troubling, what this military video does not say is anything about the Constitution or the rights of citizens. Nothing. Nothing at all. And the government has been gradually acclimating us to this specter of the police state for years now. Militarized police, riot squads, camouflage gear, black uniforms, armored vehicles, mass arrests, pepper spray, surveillance cameras, drones, arrest of journalists, crowd control tactics, intimidation tactics, the TSA. That's not airport, that's Transportation Security Authority. And they've already run their drills periodically on the streets, on public transportation, on bus systems, just to give it a test, you know. Yeah, stop and frisk, strip and search before you get to travel anywhere. They have been accustoming us to this for a long time, conditioning us to live like this, and we didn't do anything about it. Screamed bloody murder here. But nothing happened in the United States because people want to feel safe, right? You want to feel safe. You don't scare people by making, you don't want to scare people by making dramatic changes, writes John Whitehead. You do it gradually. You acclimate them slowly to their prison. You persuade the citizenry that their prison walls are merely intended to keep them safe and keep the danger out. This is how you prepare a populace to accept a police state willingly, even gratefully. Even gratefully. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Money. Accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on.
We got accent. Positive, dealing money to negative and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. You gotta spread joy.
Well, that's not the crew trying to get me in a better mood.
Down to the minimum.
Although it helps. That's the opening to Blast from the Past. And it was a blast from the past. Going back and looking at that, I can remember when the Cuban Missile Crisis began, and that's the way the introduction there is. You see people wearing full, hazmat suits, radiation at the time, bomb shelters that everybody was building. You know, the difference, a couple of differences between the Cuban Missile Crisis and what is happening now. First of all, we had President Trump address the nation from the Oval Office yesterday, talking about how they're going to suspend travel and so forth. You know, a blockade, essentially, if you will, right? We had done a blockade of Cuba because of the missiles. It was an act of war. And I remember watching JFK on television, and I knew, even though I was in the first grade, that government was crazy, that these people either deliberately or accidentally could start a full-scale nuclear war. They're just that crazy and stupid. And I was in first grade. I remember being forced to take clothes to school because even though we had neighborhood schools and I could run home in about 5 minutes, and I wasn't a fast runner, I had to take clothes to school and keep them there. They had drills where we stuck our heads in the desk. And at the time, we were laughing about this. We were in first grade. It's like, what good is that going to do? A nuclear bomb. Years later, I thought, are they looking for the dental records? Maybe the dental records would survive if you got your head in the desk. I mean, it was absolutely insane. But they got right up to war, beginning with the first preliminary steps of the blockade. And now the government is blockading their own people. Governments around the world are following the lead of the Chinese communists, the people who starved their own people by the tens of millions, and we now watch them for how to react and try to implement this at home. And we have people all over the press, the Democrat Party, former Bush officials like Richard Hatchett, telling us that we need to follow the lead of the Chinese communists. What world are we living in here? I mean, this is one dark comedy, isn't it? It would be funny if it wasn't so stupid. Unbelievable. Yeah, it is an act of war. Richard Hatchett is right. It is war. And it is war against the American people. It is a war against our liberties and the Constitution. They are determined that they're going to knock out every last bit of it. Going back to this article from John Whitehead, he says, just think about the fact that we've already been conditioned to the sight of police clad in body armor and gas masks, wielding semi-automatic rifles, escorting armored vehicles through crowded streets. A scene likened to a military patrol through a hostile city no longer causes alarm with the general population. I can remember in 1984 when Terry Gilliam, the guy, he's the director, he used to do the animation stuff for Monty Python, right? So he loves to do over-the-top comedy. And he did a black comedy, Brazil. Maybe you saw it. And I remember the scene where they get the wrong person. It's supposed to be Tuttle and it's Buttle or something like that because some fly falls into the crude technology that they have, right? It's this Orwellian police state, this Big Brother police state. And yet the technology is not quite there. TV screens are real tiny. They have big Fresnel lenses to blow everything up. They're working with typewriters. Nothing quite works right. That's the only redeeming thing about this police state, is they can't quite get things to work. Unfortunately, today, the technology is much better. But this guy's hitting it a fly, falls down, causes a typo error because they still have mechanical typewriters. And they get the wrong person's name, and they send a team to go arrest him. And they give him the full no-knock SWAT team raid. And it was so over the top in 1984 to see something like that. You know, they drill through the ceiling and they rappel down into the room. They kick the door down and they have the fully armored black suits with masks and so forth and guns drawn right there. Yeah, you see it? They they wrap him up in a thing and take him away. And it was just so over the top. And yet, except for the putting somebody in a bag like that to take him away, they do put him in a bag after they shoot and kill you with a no-knock SWAT team thing. But no, they bag this guy still alive. That's the only difference between this kind of over-the-top situation nearly 40 years ago and the reality that we've now come to accept with our fully militarized police, this war on drugs. Beware of the war on viruses. Beware. The war on terror. The sight of police clad in violence, that doesn't cause us to have any qualms whatsoever. No alarm, no comment. We're accustomed to it. Why? Because they've done it gradually. This is a test right now. They're conditioning you for something right now. Right now. That's what this is all about. We've acclimated ourselves to the occasional lockdown of government buildings. We've acclimated ourselves to Jade Helm-style military drills in small towns. And as John Whitehead says, you can't say we weren't warned. You can't say I didn't warn you. I went to AP Hill, and I went into the Asymmetric Warfare Center that was inside AP Hill. We broadcast that live for well over an hour to show you that your government was training for full martial law in the cities. And as I think back on that experience, it was pretty eerie. Went there with Joe Biggs, pretty eerie to walk through the replicated city with nobody in town. That was really strange. Really strange. Especially knowing what they were up to. And I'm getting that same sense right now. It's deja vu all over again. Deja vu all over again. In 2008, he points out in his article, Whitehead, an Army War College report revealed the, quote, widespread civil violence inside the U.S. could force the defense establishment to reorient priorities to defend basic domestic order and human security. That's why they have these asymmetric warfare centers. The 44-page report went on to talk about things like economic collapse. You think that's being engineered right now? You better believe it is. Economic collapse is being engineered right now. Right now. Loss of functioning political and legal order. That's what we hear from the media all the time. Pervasive public health emergencies. These were the scenarios that they've been working on for a dozen years. And now they're rolling it out. Why? Because you got accustomed to being strip searched as a condition to flying, to seeing SWAT teams and militarized police in the streets. Well, you're going to get a lot more of that. Get used to it, I guess. Get used to it.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Listening to the David Knight Show.
Here's a list of some of the corona panic that is going on right now. We have the NBA suspending its season indefinitely after one player tests positive for the coronavirus. We have the March Madness tournament of the NCAA will be played. However, no fans. No fans allowed for March Madness. Maybe March Madness brings on an entirely new attitude. UCLA and Duke are joining the growing list of coronavirus campus closures. You know, you had Yale telling people to go home. Yale or Harvard, one of those. Maybe both of them. Who knows? And you know, that's the you see all the articles about the millennials saying, hey, I'm not worried about this. It's an old person's disease. I'm going to be taking cruises. I'm going to be going to spring break, flying everywhere. I can get these cheap flights and so forth. So that's what they can do since they don't have to go to classes. Tom Hanks, Rita Wilson are in Australia filming a movie about Elvis Presley. He's not playing Elvis. He is playing Colonel Tom Parker. But he and his wife have tested positive for coronavirus. You have the late night shows are acting like the NCAA tournament. They are going to still continue to play because, you know, you can't stop criticizing President Trump. Yeah, you know, they've got to have these frontline troops there at the late night shows. Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers, and Trevor Noah, Stephen Colbert. You got to have all those guys. They just won't have any audiences there. So they'll just be going back to the usual laugh tracks. but they're going to continue on with that. CBS News, however, has closed its Manhattan office over coronavirus exposure. So now they'll be broadcasting live from the CIA as a, they'll eliminate the middleman. They'll probably just whoever the CIA director is. Seattle Public Schools will be closing for 2 weeks in light of the coronavirus concerns. You know, this is one of the things that I think is going to be an interesting effect of this. I think it's going to be kind of hard. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, when kids and parents realize, as many homeschoolers do, that when you start doing school at home, you can get more done in half a day than the students get done in an entire day with all of the nonsense that happens in the institutions. You know, going here, going there, busing here, busing there, and so forth. They're going to save so much time, they may never want to go back to school. they can still propagandize people wirelessly and in a distributed fashion, of course. But yeah, it may be a kind of an interesting side effect of that. We have an Islamic scholar who said that the coronavirus was Allah's punishment. He gets the coronavirus. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange is going to close the trading floor beginning tomorrow. So we're going to shut down travel from Europe beginning tomorrow, you know, Friday the 13th. They're also going to shut down the commodities trading on Friday the 13th. And I think this headline is true. I think the coronavirus will bankrupt more people than it kills. And that is the real global emergency. And you can always count on people to look at the monetary aspects of this. But nobody is even, and President Trump is trying to make some concessions to help people as people are afraid. The media is generating fear. You know, we have an individual on Twitter put out a couple of pictures and said, here's the mainstream media in my town. I've got pictures of them pulling down an entire shelf of goods in a store so they can present the news about people buying stuff in hysteria over the coronavirus. So it shows them pulling it down and then has a clip of the news report that they put up. I don't doubt that, quite frankly. I really don't doubt that. This is being engineered. And it's about more than the economics of this. They are really coming after our civil liberties. Even when you look at conservatives, I'm very disappointed. Breitbart had an op-ed piece from Carney a couple of days ago. And he was saying 9 things that Trump can do to save the economy from the coronavirus. And, you know, most of these are straight out of the Democrat Party platform. This is the kind of stuff that Occasional Cortex and Bernie Sandernista would propose. It's like, why are we doing this? Out of fear? Seriously? There are other ways to handle if you're concerned about a disease. And I'm not saying be cavalier about it. You can prepare, but you better prepare to defend your individual liberty. You better be getting some lead, quite frankly. So here's the list of things that he's got. Federally funded sick leave. Oh, yeah, let's get people accustomed to federally funded sick leave. Again, another government handout, right? Pelosi and Schumer calling for mandatory employer-provided paid sick leave, something that the American left has long demanded, he points out. But no, let's not do that. Let's not force the employers to do it. Let's force the government to do it. That'll be better, says the conservative. The next one, let's give leave to parents as well. We'll pay them to stay home and take care of kids as well. Another one. Supersize unemployment benefits. Well, that's fine. People have been paying tax into unemployment things. That's still does not incentivize or accustom people to a government program. I think that's a little bit of intermediate help. Look, when I look at a situation like this, I don't look to the government to save me, and neither should you. This has been the biggest blind spot of conservatives for a long time, falling into the same trap that the left does. We have a problem. Call Washington. Better yet, let's put in a conservative president, and then we don't have to worry about anything. He'll fix everything for us. That is the mindset of a slave. And you're going to be enslaved with that kind of mindset. If you look to Washington to solve all of your problems and emergencies, when they are the ones who are creating most of the problems and emergencies, you will be enslaved. And so I look at this. The first thing I look for is like, well, what is government doing to hurt people? And there's a long list of stuff like that. I mean, you look at taxes. You look at prohibitions on things that are safe, natural, and effective. See, we're not being, nobody in the American press, except for here, is really talking about any natural remedies. Even in Shanghai, they're talking about, well, yeah, we can use vitamin C. We got you can look into the alternative press. You know, Mercola, Natural News, others, they're talking about things that you can do that are safe, natural, and effective. Yesterday, I had Patriot Nurse on, and she was saying, look, if you're going to prep, make sure that you've got healthy food. Because if you get just a bunch of highly processed canned garbage, then it's going to make you sick. And then you're not going to have any medicine or any other fresh food. So you start to think about, what can I do to make myself more healthy? That's not the message that's being pushed out by the mainstream media. No, we have to shelter in place until Big Pharma has an untested solution for us. And then they're going to demand that you get that. So, yeah, you could give people more unemployment benefits because, you know, they've got a job. They've been working. This is a temporary insurance policy that employers pay into. You could have a tax holiday for small business. Good. Yeah, that's a good idea. You could have payroll tax cuts that President Trump has proposed. Good idea. Cut the taxes. Stop punishing people. I've said all along. Look, when we talk about all this single-payer health care stuff, don't talk to me about the government doing anything to help me with health care until they allow me to spend to deduct my health insurance costs and allow me to deduct my health expenses 100% before I send the money to Washington. Until they do that, you understand that all this talk about health care and health insurance provided by the government is simply a tactic to get control of you, to make you dependent upon them. If they really wanted to help you, they wouldn't take your money. They would let you first provide for your health care. They'd let you first provide for your education. All these things that they say are so essential. They don't believe that. Send me the money. Then I'll decide how much to dole back to you like children on an allowance. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Working starts to make me wonder where the fruits of what I do are going. He says in love and war all is fair, but he's got cards he ain't showing. How much does it cost? I'll buy it.
Unless they shut the stores down and lock you in your houses. There's an article that came out today. Rats will avoid actions that hurt others, even if it earns them a treat. See, there is a difference between rats and politicians. Politicians have no such qualms about that. They, as a matter of fact, that is their business. Hurting other people always gives them a treat. And I seem to think that when I look at what they do, it seems to be that that maybe is its own reward for politicians, hurting other people, dominating other people. I mean, it really is a sick, pathological psychology that drives these people, in my opinion. No respect for others. I mean, you could see it in Bloomberg better than anybody else. The mask was off. Just like you have Bernie Sanders and AOC saying, we got to take the cars, we got to shut people down off the planes. Well, now they got a reason to do it. See, it's for your health. You're begging them to do that. Please don't let anybody fly into the United States by any means. I mean, we'll leave the borders wide open for very poor people coming in from places where there's very poor hygiene and so forth. No problem with that. No problem with that. I wonder, you know, we've had all these different pandemics, Zika and so forth. They still have a big part of the New York City Health Department is addressing the Zika virus. I wonder how many cases of Zika virus they have in New York City compared to the coronavirus. Or, you know, pick a disease. This is a city with millions of people. And they're running in and locking areas down with the National Guard. Now you've got the U.S. military moving into areas to lock them down in martial law. There is no sense of proportion about this. Why are they doing this now? Well, you know, the CDC, by its own admissions, we got thousands of people, tens of thousands of people that are dying from the flu and hundreds of thousands people that have the flu and so forth. But they're not quarantining people about that, right? I mean, they have browbeat you to get your flu shot. Just get the flu shot. They've done everything they can. They try to make it free for you, like Bernie Sanders would do. They try to threaten you. But people know. They've had the flu. They've gotten over it. I've got an article here from RT freaking out about the fact, look at this. We got a 40% increase in whooping cough. You know, what'd they have? You know, they had maybe 10 people with whooping cough, and now they've got 14. What's the absolute number here? Nobody died from it. You can die from anything. You can die from the flu. You can die from measles. You can die from whooping cough. And you look at what they have done with these other diseases, trying to panic the public, trying to force you into getting it, and they've got to have something that's new, that's not known. And I believe that's what's really driving all this coronavirus stuff. It may be a worse strain of the flu, or it may be another swine flu thing. Remember, more people were harmed by the swine flu vaccine than anything else. And so even though they have cried wolf, 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 many times with WHO pandemics. And again, when you talk about President Trump, it was just yesterday that the WHO claimed that this is a pandemic. Just yesterday. Where have they been? Where's the criticism of the WHO for waiting this long to declare it a pandemic? You don't see any of that criticism. And then when President Trump shuts down travel from Europe, you have Acosta, you have Nadler saying that, Acosta calls it xenophobic. Nadler says this isn't going to help a public health. Restricting foreign nationals. Hey, we need to keep the borders open. And then you look at conservatives. Like I said, you've got conservative writing an op-ed piece at Breitbart talking about how we have to, put people on welfare. We have to have free health care. Yeah, he does talk about how, the government can cut taxes to help people right now while we have an economic crunch. But then he goes on to talk about, basic income guarantee. Yeah, that's what we need to have. This is a conservative pushing this. Why? Why are they doing this? Why do you see all of these things about, universal basic income? Andrew Yang, well, you got to have that. Well, this is how they get you accustomed to it. Well, just give you a little bit of a taste. Wasn't that nice when the government sent you a big check every month for doing nothing? Wouldn't you like to have that again? We can have that. Just vote for the Democrats. Vote for whoever is going to be the Democrat version of Castro. We can get that again. Free testing and affordable treatment, says Breitbart. In other words, free health care. Free health care, universal basic income, shelter in place will keep you safe. And if you get out of your house, we will have the militarized police roaming the streets. And you'll get the boot in your face. Going back to Whitehead. The government has been amassing an arsenal of military weapons, including hollow point bullets. We broke that story here at InfoWars. Used domestically equipping and training their troops for war. Even government agencies like the Food and Drug Administration have got massive amounts of hollow point bullets, body armor, riot helmets, shields. I remember when the Washington Post reported this long before I came to InfoWars. The Washington Post said, why is the Department of Education buying up SWAT team outfits? I mean, this is in the early 2000s. And then the next year, they found out. You had the Department of Education SWAT teamed a family over the mother's delinquent student loans. They went in the dead of night, kicked in the door. I mean, this is, again, you know, like Brazil by Terry Gilliam, except it was real life. Kicked in the door, drug the father out, rustled the kids out onto the lawn, out of bed, at gunpoint, put the father down, face down. Where's the wife? Well, she had left the family. She had left the family. She wasn't even living there. But they come in and do a SWAT team raid, full militarized raid by the Department of Education because they want to collect on a student loan that was in default. There are now at least 120,000 armed federal agents carrying such weapons who possess the power to arrest. Department of Education, the FDA, all these people. You know, the FDA, they don't want you. You know, you talk about somebody getting the flu, right? You've got maybe some immune issues. It's going to make it difficult for you to deal with a virus or something. But they don't want you to be able to treat that with safe, natural, effective, and affordable treatments like stem cells. Trump's FDA just stopped that. No, you can't have that. We're waiting until the big pharmaceutical companies can patent the stem cells that they took from aborted babies. You can't use your own stem cells. This is a major power grab by the FDA. They have never claimed to own your body to that degree ever before. And so at the same time the government is banning safe, effective, natural treatments, they are scaring you to death, begging, getting you to beg for a vaccine. Rounding out this profit-driven campaign to turn American citizens into enemy combatants is a technology sector that's been colluding with the government to create Big Brother that is all-knowing, all-seeing, and inescapable. You have drones. You have fusion centers. Now, I remember when Glenn Beck, it was about 5 years ago, even though we'd reported before I got here to InfoWars, 2009, the NIAC Fusion Center, and the fact that they had a be on the lookout for anybody with a bumper sticker that they supported Ron Paul or Chuck Baldwin. And it was news to Glenn Beck just a couple of years ago. I remember him live on air. I was driving home, heard it on the radio. I was like, oh, well, let's look this up on Wikipedia. What is this thing called a fusion center? Yeah, we've been warning. You've been warned about this, and I'm telling you what's coming right now. And you better be aware of what's going on. Look, you can still get some safe, natural, effective supplements that are going to really help your health. You know, while you're storing up on the Chef Boyardee, make sure you get some vitamins and minerals that are going to actually help your health and help to cover up the inflammation. You know, we got Bod Ease is now back in stock. Turmeric, that is very effective at fighting inflammation. That's now 40% off. We have our vitamin mineral fusion drink mix, 40% off. Our Ultra 12 vitamin B12, 40% off. As a matter of fact, you can get the vitamin mineral fusion drink mix and the Ultra 12 together, 50% off. And of course, if you don't have storable food, that, unlike toilet paper, is something that you're really going to have. So make sure that you've got storable food. Again, this food is made in the U.S. It is non-GMO. It will last for 25 years if hopefully you don't have to use it now. You'll still have it for any kind of emergency that's coming up. And we've gotten our waiting list down somewhat on that. So take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. Also, make sure that you have the ability to filter your water without electricity. You never know what kind of economic austerity and collapse they're going to force on us. We'll be right back. Yeah, I went through the list of all the different things that are being closed down everywhere. Sporting events, tournaments, conventions, universities, school systems, businesses. But I think the thing that is most concerning to me is the fact that we've had governors in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New York declare martial law. And many more are going to be joining them soon. But it begins, of course, in the freedom-hating Northeast, the freedom-hating New England states, and maybe we should just call them the new King George states, because they're always looking at how they can criminalize the Second Amendment use of owning guns. They are anti-choice. They're against any informed consent. They want to mandate vaccines. They're very quick to enact martial law, of course, because this is exactly what they've been trying to gin up with their fear campaigns about measles and the flu. Exactly what they've been trying to gin up. And when we look at this, one last quote from the article by Whitehead. The present moment, we got growing numbers of Americans already voluntarily sheltering in place in an effort to avoid getting sick. Watching the events of the various lockdowns unfold, I couldn't help but think of Nazi Field Marshal Hermann Goering's remarks during the Nuremberg trials. He said, it's always a simple matter to drag people along, whether it's a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. This is easy. All you have to do is tell them that they're being attacked. You know, being attacked by a foreign government, by a disease, whatever. They're being attacked. And then you denounce the pacifists. And in this context, this would be the people who think that we ought to have some kind of informed consent. Right? Oh, those are the pacifists. Those are the anti-vaxxers who are resisting us. You denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and for exposing the country to danger. You're a threat to the herd immunity, says the herd mentality. It works the same in every country, and it works the same with every threat. Free Thought Project also talks about the coronavirus may be a threat to many, but the state's reaction is a threat to all of us. Since late December, the citizens of China have watched in sheer disbelief as the little freedom that they had left was eliminated due to the coronavirus outbreak. Millions of people have been locked down in their homes. Major cities have been turned into ghost towns. Those who dare to venture out are arrested and thrown into internment camps. When citizens are allowed in the streets, drones equipped with facial recognition hover overhead to make sure that they are wearing masks, and it takes their temperature. And if it gets a reading, it tells them you got to go to the quarantine area, right? Citizens are forced to download software on their phones so the state can track them, and all of this is being carried out for their own safety. The fact is that China has become an Orwellian nightmare, and experts are predicting this police state will stay, even if the coronavirus threat does not. And so, as the coronavirus cases continue to rise in Italy, Italian officials began rolling out similar police state measures. And if citizens attempted to flee Italy to avoid such tyranny, they face jail. Anybody leaving the containment regions risks 3 months in prison or a fine of up to $234. Of course, the Saudis will fine you up to $133,000 if you don't tell them the truth about everywhere that you've traveled. The World Health Organization has praised the response of the Chinese government, and so has Richard Hatchett, CEO of the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness. This is war. We need more centralized command and control, he says. And quite frankly, you've now got the Chinese government has printed out a glossy book, The Battle Against the Epidemic, China Combating the COVID-19 in 2020. And they've put it in pretty much every language. They don't even need to do it in English. They've got holdovers from the Bush administration that will push that kind of propaganda. Yeah, they did such a great job of controlling it, didn't they, with their authoritarian policies. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I reported a couple of weeks ago an alarming trend, an alarming idea that's being pushed by the GOP. We're now starting to hear from Republicans in Congress and in the Senate, they're starting to use the rhetoric of the Marxist left, who call themselves environmentalists. And as I've said many times, you can call it socialism, you can call it progressivism, you can call it communism, you can call it environmentalism. They're all euphemisms for totalitarianism, to control every aspect of our life, and to do it from an unrestrained central government. And so the people who are Marxists said, hey, if we didn't have the climate issue, you know, we'd have to invent it. It's like, oh, yeah. Kind of think you are. That's my personal opinion on this when I look at the so-called science. But now we've got Republicans who are now adopting all the rhetoric about carbon this and carbon that. They pushed a measure that is part of the UN agenda for a trillion trees, right? And this is kind of like a carbon exchange thing. And so they're going to put taxes on and then they're going to plant trees and sing kumbaya. The Republicans in Congress, the Republicans are talking about this. Oh, yeah, we can do 320 million trees. No problem. No problem. And so you have an article by NE News, comment from Mark Morano. He said, yeah, you know, there's a lot of sliding there in Congress. But right now with the Trump administration, he said, policy-wise, what the EPA administrator, Andrew Wheeler, is doing is phenomenal. Policy-wise, what Donald Trump is doing is phenomenal. Policy-wise, what we're doing is phenomenal and unbelievable beyond anything we could have hoped for. It truly is. But there is weakness ahead in the Republican Party, a fifth column, if you will. And I want to talk about a, we talk about the fifth column. Let's never forget the fifth columnists in the automotive press who are pushing us into an agenda of austerity and lockdown and centralized control in the cities. This is where they've been headed, and this is why I say this is now all being enacted by these people. Just a couple of days ago, we had President Trump put out a great tweet. Listen to what he had to say. If you like automobiles, how can you vote for a Democrat who all I want is to get rid of cars as quickly as possible, especially if they're powered by gasoline? Spot on. I couldn't agree with him more. I could not agree with President Trump more. Remember also, no more than one car per family. I, on the other hand, have new plants being built all over Michigan. So think about that. Think about that. Now, is that clear to you where President Trump is? Is it clear to you? He's saying you got a clear choice right now. You got Democrats. I mean, just look at the UK. Look at Boris Johnson. They've been in a bidding war to see how they can move people down. First, we're going to ban all internal combustion engines and cars for the most part. You know, not even hybrid cars are going to be allowed in their ultra-low emission zones in the UK by 2040. Then they come back and say, by 2035. Then they come back and say, well, I think we need to get it to 2032. They're going down to 2030 or sooner because they want to have their smart cities in place by 2030. And so you got Boris Johnson pushing this. You got city after city in Germany and in Europe banning internal combustion engines and so forth. You have California talking about the same thing. You've had bills put there as well. And so President Trump points out, you got the Democrats. They want to get rid of cars. This is why they're running scared of AOC and Bernie, because they're very proud of their agenda to get rid of cars, to get rid of planes, to get rid of meat on your table, to force you to live in micro apartments in cities. Yeah, there he is. Yeah, he's going to have a car. Boris Johnson is going to have a car. You won't, however. He'll have a chauffeur-driven car, probably. And if he wants one, he can have a hypercar because, you know, the roads, even though they're not maintaining them, will be completely empty. So he can drive as fast as he wants. He's a government guy. But I just read you this, right? Democrats want to get rid of the cars as quickly as possible, especially if they're powered by gasoline. Remember, also, no more than one car per family, right? That type of thing. We've got to reduce the number of cars. They have been talking about this for decades, the Democrats, the urban planners, and so forth. So you have this fifth columnist at Jalopnik, which is nothing more than a beard. They lure people in who are interested in cars, and then they push this environmental agenda about banning all internal combustion engines relentlessly at Jalopnik. It is a propaganda machine, if ever there was one. And here's a headline. Trump reaches out directly to us gearheads and may be advocating one car per family, but it's hard to tell. Really? You're a writer and you can't tell? I know this is Twitter, but even on Twitter, this is pretty clear. He's talking about the Democrats. And this guy pretends, well, I'm not really sure. Is he telling us that he's not going to allow us to have more than one car? What a lying shill he is for the Democrat Party and for the environmentalist Marxists out there. I'll be the first to admit, my particular demographic, he says, isn't usually the most targeted one by the political candidate. So when the president of the U.S. himself issues an official tweet missive that directly addresses my specific interests as someone who likes automobiles. He doesn't like automobiles. He doesn't want you to have, he likes automobiles, but he doesn't want you to have one. That's the whole point. You know, you're going to be riding in the self-driving battery electric cars. That's the only possibility that's being offered out there. Are you serious? You're going to ignore hydrogen cars. You're going to ignore every other form of moving cars, and you're going to say only those cars that drive themselves, and we have to have ride sharing and so forth. Why are we being given only one choice? Why is every other choice being banned or punished or taxed, and this one choice is being incentivized? He goes, the problem is, it doesn't seem like anything in his tweet is true. He says, I look at the DNC platform, and the most recent one is the 2016, because the 2020 hasn't been written yet. And he says, so if all Democrats want to get rid of cars, then it ought to be in the party platform, right? And so then he reads some vague things that are put in there by the Democrats are committed to defending and implementing and extending smart pollution and efficiency standards, including the Clean Power Plan, fuel economy standards for automobiles. Right there. That's it. That's it, pal. You want to understand? Why don't you look at these plans that they're referencing? See? Heavy-duty vehicles, building codes, and appliance standards. Yeah, we're going to tell you what kind of, you only can have a low-energy building, you can only have a zero-emission car, and so forth and so on. But he says, so there's nothing in there about cars. I don't see what you're talking about, right? And again, this is why they hate AOC and Bernie, because they just come out and say it. Yeah, this is where we're going. You're not going to have any of these things. You're not going to have a home. You're not going to be able to travel. Except, you know, maybe if you pay through the nose through our corporate sponsors and we watch everything that you're doing, then we might let you travel a bit. He pretends that he doesn't know. But, yeah, President Trump does know. I was very excited to see that. The problem is that President Trump has got good people in the EPA right now. He's pushing back against this corporate average fuel economy, which is a way to very subtly and through the back door do exactly the same thing that Boris Johnson is doing overtly. That Bernie Sanders and AOC would do overtly. You're not going to have that car. Turn it in. We're not going to allow gasoline to be made to fuel your car, even if you keep your car. We don't have to confiscate your car. You can park it in the front yard and let the weeds grow over it. Because we're not going to let you have any fuel. How about that? You know, when you look at these crises that are happening here, how coronavirus could set back the fight against climate change. This article from Time Magazine. Says, well, it's going to be a problem because, you know, typically we have all these conferences and now nobody can go to the conferences. And No. This is going to condition you to live under a life of austerity. It's going to condition you for universal basic income. It's going to condition you to lock down in place. And that's what this is really about. It's not about saving the planet. It's about locking you down. And the coronavirus is going to serve that agenda by preparing you psychologically for it. We'll be right back. Norm Pattiz is going to join us. We're going to talk about some of the legal outrages and high-profile cases like Harvey Weinstein. Will he survive long enough to serve his 23 years? Who knows? We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. Joining us in the studio now is Norm Pattiz, a very well-known, respected lawyer. And, of course, you can find his website at Norm Pattiz. That's P-A-T-T-I-S, normpattiz.com. And, Norm, last time you were on, you were talking about how bizarre it was that Judge Amy Berman Jackson in the Roger Stone case had put a gag order on him after the jury had delivered its verdict. And he's been under gag now, you know, since the verdict was delivered back in November. That is very unusual, but now there's been a new development. Tell us about that.
Things have gotten even more unusual. After I last saw you, she appointed counsel to serve as a lawyer for jurors whose misconduct or conduct is at issue. And those jurors were given the option to have this man represent him if they so choose.
Wow.
On yesterday's court filings, it appears that he is representing a series of jurors. The court filing is a little difficult to discern. His appearances are under seal to protect the identity of the jurors. But it appears that there may be five or six people, because I believe it was A through H or something, mm-hmm. Jurors A through H. Other jurors have the opportunity to have him represent them. And he has been provided with copies of their questionnaires. As you know, we've moved to ask for disclosure of those questionnaires to determine whether jurors were truthful in their responses. So I can't think of a case where a judge appointed counsel in the public interest to a post-trial challenge raising jury misconduct. So the mysteries continue in Mr. Stone's case. And then there's an additional.
It sounds like she kind of believes that there's been some misconduct there because, you know, you've got that one. The reason this all came up,
right.
We'll just review for everybody, is because you had the lady who was the foreman of the jury,
right.
A lawyer herself, who got very much in everybody's face after the when we got to the sentencing stage of this, and she defended these people who resigned in disgust, and she said, "No, I was there. I was a foreman." Blah blah blah, and you know, and so people started looking up her history, and they found out that she was very much aware of the Roger Stone case, very much had a very strong opinion about it beforehand. And so it appeared that, you know, when she was asked questions about whether she could be impartial or not, that raised questions about whether or not she was telling the truth when she made those statements to get on the jury.
It certainly does. I mean, I didn't realize at the time. She did apparently disclose on her questionnaire that she had run for Congress as a Democrat, I believe in Tennessee. That becomes apparent when you read the jury questioning. Mr. Stone's lawyers knew that. But I've seen the blank jury questionnaires, and so, she was asked questions about strong views about Stone, about whether she could be fair and impartial, about her sources of news and so forth. And depending on the answers to those questions, her Mr. Stone's lawyers may or may not have had an opportunity to adequately voir dire her or question her for jury bias. So, for example, if I were to look at a questionnaire and say that all that you looked at was Rachel Maddow and Anderson Cooper and that sort of crowd, and that you didn't have strong views about Roger Stone and you could be fair and impartial, and that you had run for Congress as a Democrat, I might be raising questions about your candor. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't see that Mr. Stone's lawyers raised those questions of her during voir dire. I haven't seen her jury questionnaire, or at least her jury questionnaire has not been released to me, for me to know how the voir dire should be conducted. But I can tell you the voir dire I read was nominal. So this raises questions about whether she was candid. The judge appeared to suggest that the fault for this lies with Mr. Stone's lawyer. As I said before, I think that's a dodge. They may
I do too, because when this is happening, this is one of the reasons why we've been saying, you know, it was not a fair trial, because it was coming out that if you know, the few people in Washington that are Republicans, when it was known, they were basically kicked off. But you had people, one in particular, that was a high-ranking official in the Obama administration, and that was going to be okay until that became something of a news feature, and then the judge removed that individual. But it appeared that that was happening time and again, mm-hmm. was the information that we learned from people who are watching the trial. And so when she comes out with these vitriolic statements, on when it is shown that she had these kinds of statements on social media before the trial, that looks pretty. And the idea that the judge is now going to appoint counsel for these jurors.
No, it's astounding.
That's
another piece that I didn't mention to you, that I'm working my way through the trial transcript now. On the day that Mr. Stone was sentenced, there was some dispute about how the sentencing guidelines would operate. The judge calculated a high guidelines number, but departed downward, gave him a lighter or a lesser sentence than the law could have sustained. Mm-hmm. But one of the factors that she recited in her decision to impose sentence was his speaking out, being critical of the government during the course of his trial. And, you know, from that to me is jaw-dropping. She'd also made a ruling on a motion in limine that the government's motives in bringing the prosecution could not be questioned. You know, a jury trial is a test between the government and the accused. The federal prosecutors, state prosecutors routinely rely on the following trope at closing argument. We want the defendant held accountable for his actions. well, you know, isn't a jury supposed to hold the government accountable for it? And, you know, it's not a dodge to say only this man is on trial. It's United States of America versus Roger Stone. In an adversarial context, the motives and conduct of both parties should be fair game.
Exactly.
So the notion that she somehow punished him for speaking out at all is a very, very strong and powerful appellate issue for Mr. Stone.
I remember when Mueller was chosen and he had all these people in the mainstream media, oh, this guy, he's just wonderful. And Harvey Silverglate. Said, no, I've had some experiences with him. And he talked about how he had tried to entrap him into, committing perjury, sent a guy in that was wired up. But then he also talked about how he got involved in the Jeffrey McDonald case well after there'd been very well documented misconduct by the FBI. And he said that the team of lawyers that were representing McDonald came into a meeting with Mueller. And Mueller said, all right, first of all, we're going to make one thing clear. You will not say anything derogatory about the government or the FBI.
Yeah, I mean,
and so he says, this guy is a Torquemada. I mean, that is the antithesis of due process and free speech and the way this whole system works.
No, it really is. And isn't it Silverglade who wrote Three Felonies a Day?
Yes, he is. Yeah.
I mean, that's a classic book. I mean, basically, you know, I mean, and maybe your viewers need to be reminded, at the time the Republic was founded, there were about 40 or so federal felonies. Right now, no lawyer knows how many there are, because if you combine mental states, the inchoate mental states, accessorial liability, conspiratorial liability, with the specified crimes in the penal code, you end up with thousands of offenses. And it's possible that just innocently going about your day, thrice a day you make a federal felony, giving prosecutors the decision when to grab you for whatever reason. And that's just wrong.
Well, it's like the IRS code.
Yeah.
You know,
it's been said,
you don't want a law that's sufficiently complex. It's the same as having no law at all, because then it becomes the subjective administration of whoever is there at the time, right?
I don't do my own taxes, but I do sign the forms, and they make me responsible for whatever my accountant has set me up for. So far, I'm free, and I'm loving every bit of it.
I know exactly where you're coming from. I had that eerie feeling every time I would turn over all of my books to the accountant, then he would give me this indecipherable thing, and I'd have to sign it. And it's like, what am I signing here?
My wife and I own a bookstore, so many years ago, the IRS wanted to audit the bookstore, and my accountant called and said, will you attend the audit? I said, no, I'm not going to answer any questions from the feds. And they said, well, that's not smart. I said, ask Martha Stewart about how smart that is. They're going to think he's a smart guy. He doesn't know what's going on in the bookstore. I said, you go to the audit. If they want me to pay him more money, I'd rather pay him more money than go to jail for not knowing what's going on in my own business. And that's a sad state of affairs.
Oh, yeah. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that, because we've had some statements made by General Flynn's sister about how they tried to blackmail him to the plea bargain. Okay. When we come back, we got another segment with Norm Pattis. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Without the freedom to offend, there is no free speech. It's the David Knight Show. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. Norm Pattis is here with us in studio. Again, you can find his website, normpattis.com. And we were just talking about how insane this Roger Stone trial is. The fact that they still have a gag order on him. The fact that she put in a sentence and then has now delayed this even further. But what you talked about, the new development, that she's putting out counsel for the jurors, she thinks that they did something wrong. Amazing developments for Roger Stone. But we also had Roger Stone's sister, I covered it yesterday, came out and talked about how the strong arm tactics, you had mentioned just before we went to break about 302s and Martha Stewart and so forth, you know, the crime of lying to the government. Because, of course, as most people know, Martha Stewart, or maybe they don't know, Martha Stewart did not go to jail for insider trading. She went to jail for the 302 violation, you know, lying to the FBI when she's being questioned about something. And so General Flynn's sister said that as the Strzok and Page texts had come out showing that, they were altering the 302, showing that the people who did the interview with General Flynn did not believe that he'd deliberately misled them. At that same time, they stepped up the threats against General Flynn by threatening, as Manafort was doing time in solitary confinement, they essentially implied that that was what was going to happen to both him and to his son. And then the government did contact Flynn's lawyers, telling them, hey, we've got these new revelations coming out of Strzok and Page But that was not passed along to him by his lawyer. They were pressuring him to do the guilty plea.
That's shocking to me because, you know, a lawyer has a duty of loyalty to his client to the exclusion of the world. And if you're not going to sign up for that fight, don't take it on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's difficult in the law where lawyers have a lot of experience in a given area of law and the client doesn't sometimes to counsel your client. You may say, look, I see the evidence coming. You're likely to be convicted. It's in your interest to work something out with the government. If you say, no, I don't want to, then as your lawyer, it's my responsibility to fight. Some lawyers get in bed with the government and try to induce their clients to cooperate when they think it's in the client's interest. So I will give Flynn's lawyer, then lawyers, the benefit of that doubt, even though I don't share the perspective. The decision about whether to enter a plea, whether to waive your right to remain silent, those decisions belong exclusively to the client. Mm-hmm. I can advise you, but you decide, and then I'm bound by your decision. But, you know, the strong arm tactics that go on behind closed doors, those are never adequately portrayed to the public. I've never really seen a movie or read a book that describes truly the terror of facing the government behind closed doors. Because the phenomena is what lawyers call charge bargaining. When the government is investigating you, they have a decision about what charges to pursue. So typically the way a federal investigation of this magnitude begins is you get a knock on the door and there are two FBI agents and they've got a target letter for you. And that letter says you are a target of a federal investigation. We're advising you to get counsel and have counsel talk to us. Of course, we'll be happy to talk to you here in your living room if you want to give up the ghost, and many people do. But I'm telling you straight up, pro tip here. Yes. The FBI knocks on your door. You must say clearly and unambiguously, I will not speak to you without a lawyer.
And then watch Richard Jewell.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Movie,
I'm in the midst of watching it. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah.
The conclusion of it. But, you know, clearly and unambiguously, I will not speak without a lawyer present. You get the target letter. The lawyer looks at it. And then what the lawyer is supposed to do is call the feds up and say, what the hell's going on here? What do you want? Now, the feds then have a choice about how candid they'll be with you. So for many years ago, for example, there was a prosecutor who was being investigated for potential corruption in Connecticut. A client of mine was a lawyer, got a target letter. I called the feds. They brought him in. They tried to scare him about some pension tax issue. We had an expert look at it and say, that's not the issue at all. I called the federal prosecutor who wouldn't back down. I said, here's the deal. Until you're straight with me, my client's not going to talk to you. We showed you the tax accountant's position. You've got nothing here. You tell me what you want. We'll tell you whether we'll give it to you. He called back a few days. He'd been approved to tell me the truth. They wanted our guy to wire up against the prosecutor. We refused to wear the wire, and there was a tense standoff for a couple of years that worked out well for my client. But what was terrifying was the extent to which federal prosecutors were free to use lies, deceit, and misdirection with respect to the client. But the client was held to a higher standard. The client was held to a standard of, if not perfection, close to it. Lie to the feds and you're in trouble. You mentioned a 302. What is a 302? It's a pre-printed form where federal prosecutors write down everything that they say you said. Now, you don't sign it adopting it as your own statement. It becomes the FBI's version of what you want.
Wow.
If this
almost
and,
ex parte.
Well, yeah, but no, here's where it gets totally chilling, David. Yeah. If I go with you, it's called a proffer session when you meet with the feds. If I go to a proffer session with you and I bring a tape recorder saying, I don't trust the 302, I want an independent record, they will not do it as a matter of Justice Department policy. So consider the way the deck is stacked against the declarant, the person speaking.
So they consider a tape recorder just as you're taking the fifth. Right.
They
just walk away.
Yeah, they won't do it. They want the ability to create their own record so that they can use the record that they've created against you. If you want your own independent record, game off. And so, you know, that's just a subtle example of the sorts of pressures that are brought to bear.
Very telling.
Now, with respect to the pressure on Flynn, you know, they could look at people similarly situated and say, if you don't play the game, this is going to be the outcome. This is what we'll seek to do to you. If you choose to help us, we'll charge a minor charge. We'll make your cooperation known to the judge. The government will not take a position on what sentence you serve, which is about as far as they'll go. They can't make any promises because in a federal sentencing, the judge makes the ultimate decision. But, you know, a savvy consumer of legal resources knows that that means, you know, sing and you might walk, remain silent and, you know, get a scholarship to a federal penitentiary. So it's unsavory. It's it's
and that's why, what is it? It's in the high 90s percentage of people who go ahead and take a plea bargain.
According to the most recent statistic by the United States Supreme Court in a published decision, I think it was in the Lafferty versus Missouri, I think 97% of federal cases end up with guilty pleas. And then a very small percentage are tried, you know, 2 or 3%, and the government wins most of those. So the federal government cherry picks its cases. It has enormous resources, and the federal penal code is so extensive, you know, that they can almost find something. You know, we were talking about three felonies a day in the Silverlight book. You know, there's almost something you've done every day that they can get you if they want you long enough. So we're all at risk.
Because you're talking about how things are skewed, you know, between you and the FBI, but then things get skewed. If you go to trial, you're going to have the situation like we just saw with Roger Stone. The way the jury is picked, the instructions that are given to the jury. Last time you were here, we talked about the jury nullification, how you had a federal judge that has just, you know, been called on the carpet by two out of three judges on the appellate level. But one of them agreed with him and said, yeah, this clearly was a case that called for jury nullification. So you got juries that aren't informed. They don't understand what their role is. You got jurors that are picked to, you know, to come after you from the angle of the state. So it is a very rigged
and a stacked investigative process.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a, very, it's a rare defendant who can match the government with resources. You know, in the OJ case, for example, the state case, but for his wealth, would F. Lee Bailey have found Mark Furman using the N-word in a different state? Probably not. But yet that's the sort of things the feds will know if they put the resources into investigation.
We've only got about a minute left. Your quick take on the Harvey Weinstein thing. You think they're going to have any success on appeal?
Yes, there's an excellent issue on appeal. In the Weinstein case, the state used what's called a forensic psychologist to offer testimony that the women who claimed rape would nonetheless have been expected, given the trauma they endured, to have consensual sex with Harvey thereafter. I mean, seriously? The issue that the jury was to determine was whether there was non-consensual sex at all. To permit an expert to testify that women who behaved in a certain way after the allegations to be proved, that behavior proves the allegations, is to beg the question. It's to argue circularly. I think it was enormously prejudicial to Mr. Weinstein. Rumor has it that he's got Alan Dershowitz from Harvard to take the appeal. I like his odds on appeal a lot.
Wow. Assuming that he can survive long enough.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, it's not just his heart, but it's his allies, like the Clintons, that he is somehow an embarrassment to. We'll have to see how that turns out. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks,
Norm Pattis.
Me.
And again, you can find him at normpattis.com. Thank you, Norm.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Welcome back. I was just talking to Norm Pattis, and who brought up the three felonies a day, the idea that lawyers don't even know how many felonies there are, just like the IRS. They don't even know how many pages there are in the tax code. I remember covering an event back in North Carolina where a candidate wanted to shred the tax code visually, a representation of it at least. And they had a giant, you know, wood chipper. And they wanted to know how many pages there was in the IRS tax code. Not even, you know, how many rules there are, but how many pages are there? And he called the IRS time and time again. Nobody could give him an answer. Nobody knew how big the IRS tax code. So they certainly don't know how many different rules there are. They don't even know how many different pages there are. It's like, who bothers? I mean, just do whatever we want, because that really is what happens. If it's very complex and nobody knows how many rules there are, how many pages of rules there are, then isn't it kind of arbitrarily applied? So he just went with a very rough estimate and took the equivalent number of phone books and fed it into a wood chipper and created a lot of confetti there to make his point about getting rid of the tax code. And so when I look at this story about the fact that the IRS may delay the April 15th tax deadline in order to help people, you know, because we know what I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, but they won't do anything unless they really feel like there's an emergency coming. And then they will start to take some of the burden that they place on us on a regular basis. So they're talking about the fact they may delay the April 15th tax deadline. Now, that has a number of interesting side effects that may come from that. If you delay and delaying the tax payments, that's the most interesting part of that. It isn't just filing the report because, you know, you can get an extension on filing the report, but they have never given an extension on paying the money. It's always due on April the 15th. But that brings up an interesting point, and that is if you move it closer and closer, they keep it, you know, 6 to 7 months away from the election. If you move it closer and closer to the election, that whole process is going to be more and more on your mind, isn't it? Isn't it? And so you're going to have, that may affect the election. As a matter of fact, there's even questions as to whether or not Californians have had enough of high taxes based on this most recent election on Super Tuesday. You know, we're still seeing various things that are, everybody's like, what happened with the presidential race? But there's a lot of other information that's buried further down that people are gradually going back and mining. And here's some data to be mined from the election in California. The defeat of the largest borrowing proposal in the history of California schools, $15 billion for school repairs. And that defeat has opened the question as to whether or not California voters have put a temporary halt on the growth of government debt because of the unsettled political scene. Or are they on the cusp of a tax revolt akin to the one that happened in the 1970s that brought landmark changes to property taxes? And so you look at this and you say, well, that was a record tax increase. I know it's schools, and I know that everybody says, well, we'll pay whatever we need. You tell us what you need. We'll give you a blank check for schools. I'm not one of those people, quite frankly. I make a clear distinction between schools and education. They're not one and the same. As a matter of fact, the government schools can be very antithetical to education. They can miseducate you. They can deliberately dumb you down. And I think that has been the purpose of government schools. I think that's the purpose of creating the Department of Education, to accelerate that process, to centralize the control of education. Oh, yeah. That's what the Department of Education has done. It needs to be killed. And that's what Reagan said he was going to do, but he didn't do it. And so we're still stuck with that. But it's typically a blank check. Nobody typically votes against the school bond issues. And so they go further and further into bondage to that institution. However, it's been a generation since a California state school bond has failed. But that wasn't the only one to fail. It didn't fail just because it was a giant issue, $15 billion, because that doesn't matter to voters anymore. You know, You can't get your head around $15 billion. It might as well be, you know, $15 trillion. Even when you get to millions, you can't really picture that, right? So, you know, once you get up to a certain point, it just you can't even envision what that's going to be. Unless you take that down and say, this is how much you're going to pay, how much you're going to be on the hook per household or something like that. It's absolutely meaningless. Maybe somebody did that for them. But it didn't stop there. Voters rejected more than half of the 237 local tax and bond measures that were on the ballot. Think about that. This is California. So they have 237 tax increases on the ballot. And more than half of them were rejected. Anywhere else, it would have been a lot more than half. Several dozen contests are still undecided in California as authorities are wading through hundreds of thousands of uncontested ballots. And so that's kind of an interesting turn on the on taxes. Is this the end of the world? I mean, you know, death and taxes have always been inevitable, right? if the California people are saying we're going to not vote for more taxes, and if the IRS is saying we will delay the paying of taxes and so forth, I mean, is this the end of the world or what? No, death is still coming for each and every one of us. And that's really the key lesson on all of this stuff, folks. You know, you're not going to escape death by giving up your freedom, right? I mean, if you want to prep, get a Bible and read it, because that's the ultimate test that's coming for each and every one of us. And we don't know what's going to happen. Well, you look at risks. Nobody understands risks anymore, do they? You know, what are your risks of dying of coronavirus versus dying of a heart attack or versus dying of cancer or versus dying in a car crash or some other kind of accident, slipping in your bathtub? Nobody pays any attention to the actual statistics. And that's why I am absolutely certain at this point, as I see the martial law rolling out in New England, that that is what this is all really about. This is not about response to a disease. Yes, they have the ability to weaponize stuff. And yes, nobody ever cared about that, did they? Nobody ever cared. And they want to make sure that you don't pay attention to those bioweapon labs. They want to make sure that you don't pay attention to the fact that UNC North Carolina continued for 2 years after the funding was banned. The National Institute of Health and UNC Chapel Hill continued on with their coronavirus Chinese, moon bat or something like that, a specific species of bat out of China, the same one that people are talking about with this coronavirus. And they created this chimera in violation of the law, in violation of ethics. And it created a bit of an ethics stir when they released their paper 2 years after all that research was supposed to be stopped. But see, the law doesn't really apply to them. When I was talking to Norm Pattis off air, he was saying, yeah, there is an asymmetry there, isn't there? You know, when you're so that's a very lawyerly euphemism for a double standard. Asymmetry. Yeah, the FBI can lie to you. The government can lie, but don't you lie to the FBI or the government. There's an asymmetry there. That's a great way to put it. But I guess you have to couch things in those types of polite terms when you have to operate and dance around the feet of that stomping herd of elephants we call the federal government on a daily basis. Speaking of which, one more thing. The IRS history of attacking political dissenters and opponents. Actually, we don't have enough time for that because we're coming up to the end of the break, and I want to talk about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com because, folks, if you don't prepare, you're leaving yourself vulnerable to be manipulated. Don't fear. Don't fear. Prepare. It's just that simple. And this is a wake-up call for you. Do it the right way. You know, don't surround yourself with mountains of toilet paper and cans of Chef Boyardee. Not that I have anything against Chef Boyardee, but, you know, understand that you need to have good products to protect yourself and your health. You need to keep yourself independent so that you are not totally dependent on the government, so that you don't accept the kind of tyranny or beg for the kind of tyranny that these people, both Democrats and Republicans, are now talking about pushing on you. So take a look at the products at InfoWarsStore.com. That's going to at least keep free speech alive if you pick up your preparedness products from us. I know you can get them from other places, but we have the best quality products you're going to find anywhere, and we've got some of the best prices you're going to find anywhere. Our Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix is a great way to get your baseline of vitamins, minerals, amino acids without taking a lot of pills. It's now on special 40% off. You always want to make sure you've got vitamin B12, and we have one of the best that you're going to find anywhere. Ultra 12, 40% off. You can get the two of those together, 50% off. You can take care of your health with BodEase. You're going to concerned about inflammation and that type of thing. BodEase is now 40% off. Turmeric, a great support for your immune system, not just for inflammation. InfoWarsStore.com.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As I said, I want to talk briefly about the IRS's history of attacking political dissenters and opponents as we look at the back and forth in Congress and the Senate. You know, the House has put forward a so-called FISA reform bill. Many people like Rand Paul are saying it doesn't go far enough. I agree. And we need to understand that before any of this stuff happened, the IRS really was their data collection point. The level of detail about your life that you had to include in a income tax form made it possible for them to come after individuals, to investigate individuals using the IRS code. Now, that's not supposed to happen, right? Except that we know that it really does. We had Richard Nixon with his enemies list that he gave to the IRS commissioner. The IRS commissioner, he said, yeah, I want you to investigate these guys pretty closely, right? And the IRS commissioner, who was not friendly to Richard Nixon, put him into a safe, and then that was one of the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon. And yet, when Barack Obama did the same thing, the IRS commissioner did not put it in the safe because the IRS commissioner was a friendly to the Democrats. He went ahead and investigated the Tea Party groups, right? And they slow walked their applications and so forth. As a matter of fact, when we look at what happened with President Trump, you have all these different individuals saying, oh, we want to audit his tax returns and so forth. And he said, when he didn't turn it over, he had the New York Times get what was probably a leaker inside the IRS, deliver that information to him. And Ron Paul immediately came out and started talking about the fact that the IRS has been used as a political weapon against opponents. He pointed out in the history of government expansion, as shown, government agencies like the IRS have a nasty way of sneaking into other parts of our lives, reports the Mises Institute. Paul cited several examples of the politicization of the IRS. You had FDR auditing his opponents during the New Deal. You had JFK auditing his political opponents. You had, during the Bush era, you had the investigation of a church that was hosting an anti-war sermon during the Bush era. You had LBJ attempt to weaponize the IRS with the so-called Johnson Amendment. Sounds like it was added to the Constitution, doesn't it? No. It was just a rule that the IRS put in because LBJ, as a senator, wanted that because he wanted to gag churches who were going to oppose him. So it works both ways, right? Democrats with LBJ, Republicans with Bush. You got a church out there that doesn't like you. Shut them up. Shut them up. And, of course, that's been very effectively challenged. You've had the Pulpit Freedom Sunday movement. It was put out by the Alliance Defending Freedom, I think is what they call it, or maybe it was faith. And they got a couple of brave churches, pastors said, no, we're going to explicitly talk about, maybe because of abortion, pro-life issues, but we're going to talk specifically about individual politicians. Vote for this one. Don't vote for that one because of that issue. They recorded their speech. They sent it to the IRS. They dared them to do something about it because of the First Amendment, and the IRS demurred. And yet, when we look at this, this is something that, of course, the IRS has been politicized, and we've seen that the entire surveillance state, as well as the Department of so-called Justice, the FBI, the DOJ itself, have all been politicized. We've seen this in spades over the last 3 years during the Trump administration. That's one of the benefits of this, these failed attempts to overthrow our election. It has awakened many people to the bias and the corruption of the federal government, where in the past they thought they were just operating as impartial administrators or referees. That is certainly not the case. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We have now had Viking and Princess Cruise Lines have now tapped out. They've given up because of the coronavirus situation. I reported last week they did a survey and asked a large number of people said, I wouldn't take a cruise even if it was free. And we've had several incidents where they have refused the cruise ship the ability to go to a port. We had that one ship that was in Asia. Because they had visited Hong Kong, there were five different countries that refused to allow them to port. And they eventually had to just go back, even though there was no evidence of anybody sick on board. Then we've had even worse situations, like we saw off of Yokohama, where you had the cruise ship. We had sick individuals on board. They quarantined it but it wasn't done correctly, and it became a very, very bad incubator for everybody on board. So as a result of that, it's gotten a very bad rap, and now the Viking and Princess Cruise Lines have made an announcement today that they will suspend all operations for river and ocean cruises beginning today through April the 30th. I said I'm regretfully announcing a 60-day pause of our Princess Global Ship operations. And, of course, this comes after President Trump has announced travel restrictions for the next 30 days to Europe, I should say from Europe, excluding Great Britain and excluding U.S. citizens and their immediate family members who may be abroad. They're allowed to come back. And if you want to return to the U.S. From Europe, presumably you could go through the U.K. to get back in. So, and we're sending 30,000 troops into Italy and other places in Europe without masks. So, you know, draw your own conclusions there. The coronavirus is showing the insanity of the green movement, reports the Western Journal. Reusable cups are now being replaced with cleaner, disposable paper cups and plastic cups, and reusable straws are being replaced with plastic straws. Isn't that interesting? Of course, it never really was our problem anyway. It was those the wonderful Chinese communist fascists. Actually, Hong Kong got that right. They are fascists because they've merged the government with the corporations. It was the Chinese who were dumping all the ocean islands of plastic that you see that the environmentalists talk about. That's coming from China. And the proper way to deal with it, since they're made out of petroleum products, is to burn them and generate energy. But they don't want to do that either. So they banned them until, as we pointed out all along, disposable things like that really do have a big advantage in terms of stopping the spread of disease. And here is one unintended consequence, I guess you could say, of the coronavirus. We have a Connecticut woman who has used hand sanitizer as a Molotov cocktail. A 28-year-old responded to a domestic verbal and physical altercation with her boyfriend by igniting a bottle of hand sanitizer and throwing it. The fire sparked by that bottle spread throughout the building, critically injuring four people, two adults, two children, and killing a 50-year-old, Jerome Kaiser. 30 people were hospitalized. This is perhaps the most number of people who have been harmed by the coronavirus so far in the U.S., because of hand sanitizer. So be aware. Be aware this stuff is flammable. Toilet paper is also flammable. If you're stockpiling this, beware. Beware. We're going to have Gerald Celente at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be talking about the insanity in the stock markets as well as the economy in general as things begin to melt down. But before Gerald comes on, I want to talk about another kind of insanity that is really burning our society down, a viral insanity the drag queen Storytime Hour and the idea that we're going to push gender confusion, gender dysphoria on very young children. You have a Missouri lawmaker who'd had enough. And so he introduced a bill that would ban drag queen story hour in public libraries. If the libraries did it, the librarians would be fined or jailed for violating this prohibition regarding age-inappropriate sexual material for children. And people were outraged. He's now faced vitriol and hate. After doing that, he says, I got thousands of emails. I've had death threats for me and for my family. Ben Baker out of Missouri. And how dare you put a prohibition on sexualizing children? And again, on this story from Drag Queen, from Daily Caller, talking about what is a drag queen story hour? Well, you have drag queens reading to children, and the events are designed to be about 45 minutes long. They're targeting children. It's for children who are ages 3 to 8. 3 to 8. 3 to 8. And to help them to explore gender fluidity through, quote, glamorous, positive, and unabashedly queer role models. Why are we doing that to kids? Why are we allowing cross-dressing perverts to evangelize kids to make gender fluidity and all this glamorous and positive. Why do you have to allow that? It's absolutely insane. And you've got the American Library Association has donated quite a lot of resources to support libraries who are facing these challenges. Look, I like books. I like reading books. I prefer reading books to reading off of my electronic devices and so forth. But at this point, maybe we ought to just say that these libraries have become not only an anachronism, but they become a stinking cesspool in our societies, and get rid of them and cut them off financially. If this is what they're going to be about, if this is their only mission that they have going forward, this is the key thing where they can build crowds. And this is what is so perverse and sick about this. Like I was saying before, you know, rats will avoid harming other rats even when they get a treat. But you can't say that about the librarians, can you? They will harm little children, sexualizing little children. Where did we get this idea that it is not only okay, but it has to be protected for perverts to sexualize your children? And these are parents who are bringing them in. You know, if you're going to do that to your kids, and we're not going to take these kids away from those parents. No, no, no. We'll take the kids away from the homeschooling parents. You know, or we see that over and over again. You got a homeschooling mom, and the dad who got divorced said, "I don't know, they're just too much into that church thing. I think she's brainwashing these kids. We got to take the kids." Oh yeah, we'll take those kids. Not going to take the kids from the drag queen who deliver their kids over to this Sodom and Gomorrah display. Not going to do that. Not going to shut down the funding to the libraries. It's absolutely amazing to me that he's getting death threats over that. And then we have in Canada, we have politicians who are threatening to shut down any conversion from this gender confusion that is being pushed by these people. And when we come back, I'm going to play for you a woman who lived as a man for 11 years begging Canadian politicians to not ban the therapy that healed her. I talked about the 75-year-old man who said, "My grandmother started dressing me as a child." They didn't have drag queen story time hour back there because he's 75 years old. "When I was a child, she was putting me in dresses. She got me very confused. It was psychological abuse. It wasn't funded by the taxpayers. It wasn't so the libraries could have a mission and a job prostituting themselves, using children so they can keep their libraries open." How pathetic is that? But he said his grandmother did it to him. By the time he got into his 40s, he was still struggling with it, confused. He had some very abusive operations to change his sex, and then he was able to get back. But, of course, there is psychological therapy for that. I don't know if that works. I do know that Christ changes lives, and that's what they want to shut down. That is ultimately what they want to shut down. And that's been the testimony of these people for whom the conversion has worked. Gets you out of bondage, doesn't it? We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I want to play for you the video of a woman who, in Canada, again, they are saying, we're going to understand that as this Missouri legislator is getting death threats because he said, "You're not going to do inappropriate sexual content in the libraries to kids." The very stated purpose of this is to glamorize gender confusion. And what these individuals are doing there. And he said, "No, we're not going to do that to kids. Not this age." And from the very beginning, folks, I have said this is all about maintaining the idea. If the children from 3 to 8 years old, which is the age group for the Drag Queen Storytime Hour, if 3 to 8 year olds can decide what gender they are when they're obviously a biological gender, then, and they haven't even experienced puberty yet. But they can make that kind of decision at that age, then they can consent to sex. This is where this is going. This is a pedophile agenda. Make no mistake about that. And yet, you know, you better not stop the drag queen story time hour. But if you got a psychologist or you got a church that wants to talk to somebody and help them change because they have struggled with this all their life, like the 75-year-old man who was psychologically abused by his grandmother as a child into gender dysphoria. Eventually, he was physically abused with surgery. And he said, we just got to stop this. And the thing that stopped it was not conversion therapy from a psychologist, but an actual conversion by Christ. And that's really what they want to shut down in Canada. I want you to hear a woman who lived as a man for 11 years begging Canadian politicians not to ban the therapy. Now, that's part of it. You know, there is a conflict, a direct conflict of religions. We have people who are evangelizing for pedophilia, for Sodom and Gomorrah. They hate Christianity. They don't want to live, coexist. No, it's going to be one or the other. Once before every man and nation comes a moment to decide for the good or for the evil. These two kingdoms are in conflict, and they are incompatible. And it's going to be one or the other. Here's that clip, video clip number 4.
Dear Senators of Canada, my name is Kathy Grace Duncan, and I was born a girl. But before the age of 5, I felt I'd been born into the wrong body, and I should have been a boy. The whole time growing up, I struggled with gender dysphoria, and I longed to be a boy. My home life was dysfunctional, and with the abuse from my dad towards my mom, I began to believe the messages that women were hated, vulnerable, and weak. So when I was 7, my little brother was born, and he was celebrated. It gave me the message that as a girl, I could be replaced, and to get the affirmation that I longed for, I would need to be a boy. In addition, at the age of 10 through the age of 12, I was molested by a family member. The sexual abuse confirmed the lies that women were hated, vulnerable, and weak. Not wanting to be any of those things, at the age of 19, I began to take male hormones, change my name, and I began to live as a man. Soon after starting to live as a man, I asked Jesus to become my Lord and Savior. But as a new believer, I didn't know how to respond to His will for my life. As I continued to live as a man, I fell into a deep pornography addiction and entered into a dysfunctional relationship that only brought heartache. Around the same time, I got involved at a church, and one night on my way to orchestra practice, the Lord called to me and said, "Will you now? Will you now?" I believed that the Lord was asking me to return to Him, and at this point, I had nothing to lose. So I said, "Yes, Lord, I will." After saying yes to the Lord, I was delivered from my pornography addiction. Also, after saying yes to the Lord, I had an encounter with Jesus, and I realized I needed to go back to being the woman that God had created me to be. I found hope and healing in the church. I also found a ministry called the Portland Fellowship to walk with me, and through the discipleship I received, I was able to find healing, restoration, and great peace. Senators of Canada, I would encourage you to vote no on S-202. Without the help of discipleship ministries and counseling, I could not be living in my biological sex, healthy and whole. Giving those who struggle with gender confusion hormone is only treating the symptom and not treating the real underlying issues. In voting no, you would allow hope to continue for those like me who are seeking help from counseling or from a ministry or help through their church. These places are offering healing and restoration to those who struggle with unwanted same-sex attraction, homosexuality, or gender confusion, not conversion therapy. If the discipleship places, such as ministry or counseling, are closed, the person's right to choose the type of help that they would want has been taken away. Again, I urge you to vote no on S-202. I lived as a man for 11 years, and I walked out of that 27 years ago. Change is possible. I know, because I have changed.
It's kind of interesting, isn't it? If you didn't have these authoritarian liberals who decided that they were going to criminalize free speech, criminalize individual choice, criminalize the free exercise of religion, I wouldn't be playing the testimony of a woman who's struggled with these issues all of her life and who found freedom through Christ. You might call it the Streisand effect. But it's something far more powerful than Barbara Streisand. But they won't stop. We've got the governor of Kentucky, Andy Beshear, a Democrat, of course, has now urging, as he's silent about other public gatherings, he says you probably shouldn't attend worship services. All you people should voluntarily cancel worship services because of coronavirus, of course. So he comes out and he says, well, you ought to avoid cruises. You ought to avoid nursing homes. Well, you know, nursing home, you're there, right? Cruise, that's a vacation or whatever. But then he goes to the point, he's not going to stop drag queen storytime hours at the libraries. He's not, in fact, going to shut down the libraries. You go in there and you're handling books that have been passed around, taken home or whatever. Not going to shut down the public libraries, not going to shut down the drag queen storytime, but we need to cancel worship services. Yeah, they're trying to do that in many different ways. And then we look at Utah. We have a bill that was introduced by a Republican there in the Senate. This bill would force women to see the ultrasound of the baby before they have an abortion. It would also require them to be shown that, and they would have to listen to the heartbeat and then make that decision. You had the entire female body of the Utah Senate stage a walkout. All six Democrat women walked out. The bill passed, nevertheless, 16-7. And I say this because you have to understand, the people who identify themselves as pro-choice in the Democrat Party are not pro-choice about anything. They don't want your informed consent about an abortion. They want to be able to gaslight you at the Planned Parenthood Center. If you know, if you can see the baby, and if you can hear the heartbeat, that's going to be a big obstacle to people killing that baby. Because there's a third option. You can put that child up for adoption. They don't want you to have informed consent, whether you're talking about abortion or whether you're talking about vaccines. They don't want you to have a choice. They don't want you to know what's going on, and they certainly don't want your consent. We're going to be right back after the break. We'll be talking to Gerald Celente about the economic side of what is happening with this pandemic panic that is taking over the economy of the world. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
American Dream. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Gerald Celente. We're going to take a look at the economic havoc that Gerald has pointed out was really baked into the system with this bubble that was created after 2008. And now it is hitting with a vengeance. Again, you can find Gerald Celente at trendsresearch.com. You can get a sample of his excellent journal, Trends Journal, there if you go to the website, trendsresearch.com. You can also find Gerald on Twitter at Gerald Celente. Thank you for joining us, Gerald.
Oh, thanks for having me on, David.
Well, things are kind of crazy. I don't know where the market is today. You can catch us up on the market. Yesterday, we lost 1,400 points. We went down into an official bear market, official recession, because the day before it was down 19% from its previous high. The official definition of recession is when it goes down 20%. So it's now into a bear market. What's it doing today?
Oh, it's down again. It was just about 2,000 points before I came on.
Whoa.
This is insanity. And, as you well know, it was on the David Knight Show almost about a year ago that I had forecast the greatest depression.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. People go back and look at the archives. Yeah.
And I said it wouldn't happen until 2021. Well, guess what? The greatest depression has begun. What's going on with the equity markets around the world is something I've never seen in my life before. You mentioned that we're now in a bear market. Get ready for a double bear. This thing could go down another 20%. Wow. They don't have enough money, even in the fake money that they're printing with the plunge protection teams and the other state teams that go in to try to pop up the markets when they're sliding down around the world. They don't have enough to bring this back. This is something I've never seen in my life before.
Yeah.
Businesses around the world are being destroyed. The biggest issue to me on this is how the world has just become a police state.
Yes. Yes. That's how I began the show. I said, do you understand what we're being conditioned? Regardless of what happens at this point, this is a test to see if people are going to accept this kind of conditioning. And I think we're not doing too well on this. I mean, people are begging for the government to do something. I see publications like Breitbart talking about how we need to have universal basic income. We need to have free health care for everybody. We need, welfare for everyone, and we're going to all stop working. This is the austerity program that they wanted to introduce and have us all accept by 2030. And this is the vehicle to advance that one way or the other, isn't it?
Yes. And look what's going on in Italy. Guess what? They have a new Mussolini. Just yeah. As an Italian, I'm ashamed of these people.
Yeah.
Don't kiss anybody on the cheek. Stand 1 meter away. Who made up this crap?
Yeah.
They closed down the entire country. There's nothing. There's no data, no past research to show that this is going to work. Oh, 600 people died in Italy. Oh, yeah. Italy has the oldest population in Europe. Who's dying? Elderly people. How many people died in the United States? Oh, about 30 out of a population of 327 million people. Where did they die mostly from? Oh, Kirkland, Washington. Yeah, they were old age homes that people were chronically ill. The chronically ill elderly are dying. It's a flu. It's not. Oh, stop the presses. Stop the presses. They just got one case in Turkey. I just saw it. One case in Turkey, 80 million people. Hey, how about all those Syrian refugees, huh? Forget about them. Forget about the 500,000 that are dead. Hey, how about the Ebola crisis over there in Yemen? Oh, how about the cholera crisis in Yemen? Who cares about a Yemen? Oh, I'm the governor of Maryland. We got three cases. How many people got shot in Baltimore last night?
That's right. That's right. And you know, we've talked many times about Madeleine Albright being questioned. And, you starved 500,000 Iraqi kids with your sanctions. She doesn't even have the decency to say, well, it wasn't that many. She said, yeah, it was worth it. And yet, when you look at this, everybody's got to panic. You know, Gerald, when we talk about Italy, think about the fact that people say, well, look at this. This shows how serious it is because they shut the entire country down. And it's like, that doesn't prove that it's serious. It just proves that these people are dictators. They're following the lead of China, and China is always the beta test for these globalist dictatorial authoritarian policies.
We got this little guy over here, Cuomo, the mayor in New York. Another boy born on third base and thought he had a home run, like his little brother Chris on the Cartoon News Network, CNN. You guys, they'd be nobody if daddy wasn't Mario Cuomo. Last week, I did it in our Trends Journal just as it was happening. Last week, he put in there that he could now declare a state of emergency anytime he wants. Guess what? Three days later, he declared a state of emergency. They sent the National Guard to New Rochelle, New York. Oh, the National Guard knows what they're doing. Oh, they're brilliant at this stuff. And people are
It's not just New York, Gerald. It's now Connecticut. It's Massachusetts. All these northeastern states that have been pushing mandatory vaccines that have absolutely no respect for individual liberty. They're all declaring martial law now over this.
And the people are buying it.
Yeah.
People are buying it. So you talk about Italy. The example is how gutless the people are to take this crap. That guy's name, was it Prime Minister Conte? I think they should get that O out of there and put a U in there. Because that's who he is, and that's what the people have become. Who are they to make up these laws and rules? It's not proving anything. They're destroying the global economy at a level I've never seen before. Oh, and by the way.
Exactly. I've never seen anything like this. It's amazing. I mean, we're going down like 10% a day practically. We had, everybody was freaked out on Monday. It went down like 7.5%. Today it's down 8.5%. We had one day where it recovered somewhat, but, we're down now this far. I mean, do you remember how far it went down with the 1929 crash? What was the percentage that it went down?
Well, I know that in the 87 crash, it went down about 22%. Mm-hmm. But this is different because the markets crashed, but they didn't, the airlines weren't empty. The cruise ships didn't stop sailing. Restaurants weren't empty. Look at the news. Seattle's a dead town. It's dead everywhere I go. My friends in New York, every place, it's dead. It's dead. They destroyed business at a level we've never seen before by selling fear and hysteria.
And they're mandating, like you point out, it's not just stock market panic. They are just shutting it down and saying, you're not going to get out on the streets. And this is what I'm concerned about, Gerald. And I said this at the beginning of the program. I said I'm concerned that they're going to lock everybody down in place and they're going to have us hunker down in fear until they get their vaccine ready. And then they'll say, all right, now you can come out and you can go back to work and you can go back to school and you can travel and so forth if you get our vaccine. Otherwise, you're going to stay locked down, because that's what these same states that have been pushing, enacting martial law, they've been pushing this for flu and for measles and so forth. But they needed a new disease that nobody had experienced so they could panic everybody, didn't they?
I agree. I was supposed to go to Dallas next week. I canceled the flight. Not because I'm afraid to fly. I'm afraid that I got some little freak that after they feel me up, they're going to go like this and say, get this guy out of here.
Yes.
Put him in a
yes.
quarantine concentration camp.
Exactly. Like that's what I told my wife. I said, I had business report. Well, I was going to take a trip, do some reporting. I said, look, I'm not afraid of the disease. I'm afraid of getting stuck in another state, quarantined in a FEMA camp, or being stuck in another country and not being able to get out.
Exactly. And that's what they're doing. Look what you got people take coming back on a cruise. Yeah, they're met by the military. Isn't that wonderful? And yeah. then they're sent off to these quarantine concentration camps. And you're 100% right. They're going to force the people to get vaccinated. They're going to force us to get vaccinated, or else they'll keep us in quarantine.
But you know what they're not stopping, Gerald? They're not stopping the massive military operation, Defender 20 or whatever they call it, in Italy and elsewhere in Europe. You know, as we say, we're not going to let anybody fly in from Italy starting tomorrow night, but we're going to fly 30,000 troops over there without face masks or anything because, you know, that's what's important. We got to have a drill. We've got to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with Gerald Celente. Stay with us. Talking to Gerald Celente, and of course you can find him on Twitter at Gerald Celente. Go to his website, trendsresearch.com, and there you can see Trends Journal, an excellent publication. You can get a free sample of that at trendsresearch.com. Gerald, you know, I've been looking in amazement for the longest period of time. It's like, what are these people talking about when you look at climate stuff, right? They've been going in and shutting down, deliberately banning and shutting down one of the primary core drivers of the economy, automobile manufacturing in Germany. They're trying to do it here in America. And we keep hearing from all of these climate alarmists, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. And we got to shut this down. And not enough is being done. And now you've got conservatives and libertarians screaming the same thing about the coronavirus. We've got to shut everything down because we're all going to. This is pushing this kind of suicidal austerity, self-imposed austerity, that is suicidal in its nature, pushing this on everybody, even the people now who don't believe in the green fairy dust stories, fairy tales, are now buying into this. We're going to die if we don't shut down everything. Looks to me like this is what this is about, in my opinion.
Again, let's look at the numbers. What do they say about 4,500, 4,300 people dead in the world?
That's right.
I'm not good at math. How many people are in the world? But 7.7 billion?
Yeah.
What percent is 4,000 of 7.7 billion?
I don't know. You got a lot of zeros in there, though.
You got a lot of zeros. You probably got enough zeros to go from New York to California over here.
That's
all right. Now 18,000 people died already of the flu this year in the United States. So what are we talking about? We're talking about nothing. Could this thing be more deadly than the flu? Yeah, fine. But how many people are dying out of a population? And again, in America, 30 people dead out of 327 million?
That's right.
And oh, by the way, hey, you folks in Flint, how's that water? You like to drink it? Oh, it's not doing anything. It's really making you healthy. Don't you love those artificial flavors and artificial colors and all that food? Don't you like those pesticides and GMOs? They're great for you. They're not killing anybody.
That's right. Yeah, we talk about don't dump the fluoride in the water, and they say, you crazy conspiracy, you're paranoid conspiracy theorist. And yet they're the ones that are going to shut down by mandate all economic activity just like that. Because, like you pointed out, a couple hundred people, they say, have died from this, people who had health issues to start with and rest homes and so forth. And it is a tiny number of even the smallest number that I've seen the CDC's figures, 18,000 to 46,000. They don't even know. Yet, you know, even by their best case scenario, this is a teeny tiny fraction.
Exactly. And the hysteria is being sold. I've never seen anything like it in my life. It is destroying humanity.
That's
in
right.
Terms of liberty, love, joy, and beauty. It's gone. It's
yeah.
Do you know what the cover was of our Trends Journal? Not this week, but the last week. Coronavirus 9/11.
Yes.
Spreading
yes.
terror.
That's exactly what it is, Gerald. As a matter of fact, I talked at the beginning of the program. I said, this airline official said, this is going to be worse than 9/11 for the airline industry. I said, it's going to be worse than 9/11 for our freedoms and for the economy. This is not something that we're going to get past, because this is part of building getting us accustomed to this in the same way that we're now accustomed to seeing the militarized police going down the street. We don't even think twice about that. You're going to get accustomed to quarantine and having to prove that you are you're all vaccinated up before you can engage in anything.
With the exception of one or two people, virtually everyone I know, it believes in what they're being told. And mm-hmm. I even have people telling me, again, people, for example, that hate Trump. You know, they're our elected leaders, and we should listen to them.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. You know, when we look at Trump. Yeah, when you look at Trump, he's talking about, well, let's give people a bit of a break and let's give them a tax. That isn't going to do any good if you feed the panic and if you accept this because of the pressure. Everybody's putting pressure on Trump saying he's not doing enough. He's not doing enough. All right, I'll stop people from flying in from Europe and I'll shut everything down. But then I'll give people tax breaks or whatever. That's not going to help.
No. Yeah, and again, the point that I'm making, though, about people that are now saying that hate politicians – that we mm-hmm. should be listening mm-hmm. to our politicians.
That's
that
right.
There's much, oh, did you see the one with Angela Merkel? I mean, take a look at what Angela Merkel looks like. The picture of health. She came out and said 70% of the Germans are going to catch this disease. She knows. She's an expert in this. She is the top of the top.
Yeah.
You got one slimy politician after another telling people what to do. The town was empty over here last night. I go to the place next to me, and one of the waiters said to me, yeah, she knows, right? Look at Angela Merkel. She's a pro. Look at that. Look at that life. In, I mean, 70% of the Germans. Oh, what do they got? Three people dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look at Richard Hatchett, right? This is the guy who was with the Bush administration and pushing the Patriot Act, administering all that stuff. And he's the one out there saying, this is like war. And he's also saying, our weakness here is we need to have centralized command and control like they do in China. And it's like, well, wait a minute. How can you sell that to people when you say that it got out of control in China? China didn't handle this with a centralized command and control. So why are we going to follow their lead? If it didn't work in China, it's not going to work here. But these people want what they've got in China. That's exactly what they want.
You've got it. It's the police state.
Yes.
The coronavirus is the new police state. Again, I was mentioning, so I go out, the place is empty. And one of the waiters said to me, well, the comptroller of Ulster County is telling people to stay home. Who is this person to say this?
Yeah.
There's another restaurant. That restaurants are empty everywhere. I have friends that do business in the city. Of his 15 clients, only two are buying products. Mm. Every place else, they're empty. They're empty. The police state, this is coronavirus. The people are now accepting the dictates from the politicians. Could you imagine this?
Yeah, I know. And even conservatives are running around with their hair on fire shouting, we're all going to die just like AOC. I mean, in just a week or so. Can you imagine as they drag this out what it's going to be like? I mean, it's only going to get much, much worse, isn't it, Gerald?
I'm telling you, the greatest depression has begun. And by the way, you're seeing gold prices tank. You know why?
Yeah.
Because they're pulling the money out of everything. mm-hmm. they're pulling the money out to cover their losses. They were making a lot of money in gold. And now mm-hmm. the thing is, yesterday they got to cover their losses. They're getting out of gold. But go yeah. back to 2007, 2008. Gold prices were way down as the Great Recession was just beginning. They didn't start spiking until 2009 when everybody started getting hip to it. Mm-hmm. So that's you're going to see the same thing going on now. Again, okay, I don't give financial advice, but friends have asked me, should I buy gold? They asked me this last week. I said, no. I said, wait. Because mm-hmm. I knew it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's a state of hysteria that I've never, ever witnessed in my life. And again, what brings this market crash different than all of the others is because all of the other businesses that have gone down. Don't go to the concert. Oh, could you believe the stupidity of this one? These moronic late night TV shows. They're not having audiences. They're not having audiences. What did the NBA just closed down? There's no more NBA. Right? Well, something happened where they're not having, you can't go to a stadium.
It's actually going to be good for the late night shows because now they'll have more laughs. They can get to put a laugh track in there, right?
Yeah. Another laugh track over the other laugh track. And again, because it's all a joke. So here's what's going to happen. Now hear this. Now they're going to say when this thing turns out that not that many people died, you know what they're going to say? You see, what we did was right.
We saved you.
We saved you.
That's right. It's exactly what we're saying with the other stuff. It's like, see, it's dangerous because Italy and China have shut down the entire country. So we know it's dangerous. And then, as you pointed out, Gerald, when it blows over, they say, see, we saved you.
We saved you. Yeah.
Oh, man, I tell you, that's where
and
we are right now.
And that'll give them
scary,
more rights to take more rights away from us.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
The people are cowards.
Mm-hmm.
They're cowards.
That's
again,
right.
As an Italian, I'm ashamed of them.
As an American, I'm ashamed of them as well. I'm ashamed of the Americans because the same thing is happening here.
Yeah.
It's just, I've never seen anything like it.
There's no fight. There's no fight.
Yeah.
Oh, you should see the mail, the hate mail I'm getting. Mm-hmm. Oh, how could I say this? How come I don't support you? Don't I know how dangerous it is? Yeah, I know how dangerous it is. I look at the data. Nobody's dying.
Yeah, I tell you what, governments have killed far more people than any disease ever has. And many people never even learned the lesson of what happened with Mao. I mean, he starved 50 million Chinese. There was no reason for it whatsoever. That's just centralized command and control. Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Gerald Celente. And you can find him at trendsresearch.com. And, folks, you can find products to prepare yourself to weather this storm. We don't know what they're going to do. And you need to maintain your freedom and independence. InfoWarsStore.com. Many products to support your health and to